in a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh, my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence. Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Moe.
And this is Dallin. Wow. Mitch, slumped back in the chair, exhausted, the energy in that one.
I had I had 10 more seconds in me.
You had more.
I had more.
I don't think the people could handle it. I don't think I could handle it.
Well, for continuity's sake, you know, the song's going to end at some point.
That is true. I have to cut it off somewhere. The music fades and eventually ends. Yes, it doesn't sit under us the whole time. So, yeah, you would have to end at some point. But, you know, that's okay. Well, that was a great intro. I mean, 9 out of 10.
Wow, really?
That was pretty good. I'd say so.
That's up there. That's gotta be up there then, I guess.
I mean, I think so. I think it is. And this, so you know what, Mitch? This podcast right here, this episode the people are listening to today, it's up there.
Oh, top, I mean, 39 episode of all time?
I'd say top 26.
Whoa, what?
This is a top 26 episode right here, folks.
That might be a little too rich for my
buckle up. It's gonna be a good one. We've got a great show today. At the end of the podcast, the sort of big star today of the podcast is a first round NFL mock draft that Mitch and I are gonna do for the 2022 NFL draft, which is just 2 weeks away, literally 2 weeks away from Thursday, April 28th. We're recording this on April 13th. It is a Wednesday, my dudes. And so we will be doing an alternating first round mock draft at the end of this, do some NFL draft preview. Very excited for that as well. NBA playoffs getting underway this weekend. The play-in tournament going on right now. We had a set of games last night. Net set of games going on currently. And then we'll have one final set of games to determine the full playoff field. So we'll do a little NBA playoff preview and then as well get into the news and notes around the world of sports. Mitch, so that, I mean, you know, just a casual Wednesday kicking back with the broskies, recording some pods.
Broskies and brewskies on a Wednesday, dude. It's a good Wednesday.
I guess that's it, man. So that's all I got for an intro. If you want to take it away and let's do the news. Let's just do the news.
That's right. Let's get into the news and notes around the world of sports. Let's get into the news. Strained my diaphragm on that one.
Yeah, we gotta give you a little break here.
Can you strain a diaphragm?
Mitch, I am about as much of a doctor as Dr. Dre. So
I've had a lot of questions lately that just I want the answers to. I called you about one yesterday. What happens when cemeteries get full? We don't know the answer. And doesn't matter how many times you Google it, how many different ways you word it, you can't get a straight answer. You can't get a straight answer. I've just been in a, I don't know.
What do you do when cemeteries get full? There's got to be a guy for that.
I think the only way we could find out is just go to a cemetery and ask someone. But
are you guys full? Ask them. What's the vacancy?
No vacancy? Okay, what happens now?
You know, maybe that's the
solution.
Do they
just shut it down? Or do they buy more land? What do they do?
Cemetery should have a vacancy, no vacancy sign like a Motel 6 does. That way you know.
That seems a little creepy. A little creepy.
No, I just think, you know, it'd be good to know if there's a spot available.
Like, if you thought cemeteries weren't creepy enough, putting a no vacancy sign on there definitely make it creepier.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I get that, Mitch.
We're getting off base. We get off base. It's a sports talk show.
Yes, that's all right. We will get into news, and we'll start off with some NFL news and a big contract extension on the way for Derek Carr. A lot of guys getting paid this offseason, Mitch. I mean, incredible. We've seen big numbers for wide receivers getting paydays and quarterbacks as well. Deshaun Watson getting that fully guaranteed deal, and Derek Carr locking in with the Las Vegas Raiders for another 3 years, $121.5 million extension. Mitch, Derek Carr, this is according to Mike Garofalo. I think he works for the NFL media. In all, Derek Carr is set to earn $141 million over the next 4 years, with $100 million of it coming over the next 3 years. The deal also includes a no-trade clause. So, for all intents and purposes, Derek Carr is the future of the Las Vegas Raiders at the quarterback position. And this comes as no surprise on the backs of some of the deals that they made this offseason, right? Bringing in Chandler Jones, making the trade for Davante Adams. I mean, they are pushing the chips in, as they should. And this is just the next step in that, in my opinion, right? If you weren't going to get Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson, then you had to retain Derek Carr, who is at minimum a top 12 quarterback and at best could be a top, you know, could play as a top six level quarterback, which is enough to compete. And I think this is a smart move for the Raiders. So not surprising for me. I think it's what they had to do with the moves they made. And this is, they've hitched their wagon to Carr, Adams, McDaniels, and this has got to work for all these, you know, numbers of decisions to play out well, to be the right decisions.
Yeah, I mean, this is, in my mind, this is absolutely the right decision. This has to be your guy. This guy screams lifetime Raider. I know there's a lot of Raiders fans out there that don't like Derek Carr, that are kind of detractors of Derek Carr. And I say to those people, you're wrong. This is the guy that can get you there. You just have to put the things around him. And they've tried, and they've done that this offseason. They've made the big moves. They got the big wide receiver for him. We expect a healthy Josh Jacobs coming back next year. We should see an improved offensive line, a healthier offensive line. Derek Carr is more than deserving of getting this deal. He has kept a team that would have otherwise been absolutely in the cellar of the league, in that kind of mid-tier, mid-pack range for a long time. He is a proven competitor. And I think with the additions that are around him, he will prove himself as a winner as well. So I love the addition. I think that, you know, in a year where quarterbacks are getting paid, in an offseason where quarterbacks are getting paid, this is definitely one of the guys that you should throw the money at right now, because he can get it done. He just has to be given the opportunity to do it.
Yeah, and I think the Raiders are at a point in their or the team that they have to make this kind of move, right? Unless they were willing this offseason to just blow it up and completely restart, right? Because the Gruden era had sort of built towards this sort of structure of a team, and it failed to reach the heights that they'd expected. But the age of the roster, the place that they were at, the quarterback that they had, you know, Derek Carr isn't a bad enough quarterback to feel like you can move on from, but he's also not like a top tier elite quarterback. So it made that decision hard, but they've surrounded him with very good weapons. And I think this team will be improved. We'll see what the coaching staff does to improve their fortunes. But in an AFC West that boasts Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, now Russell Wilson with Denver, this was the only sort of move the Raiders could make, right, to stay afloat in this division. I mean, it is tougher than ever to compete there. And so locking in Derek Carr and surrounding him with these types of weapons, this is the move for the Raiders, and we'll see how it pays off.
Yeah, I mean, best quarterback division in all of football by a long shot.
Yeah,
and you know what? And the Raiders did this the right way. I think that you have to know. I mean, you could be as the Raiders, you can be a believer in Derek Carr, but you have to know that those three guys are pretty tough to compete with, and you might have the fourth best quarterback in that division. and you have to give him the stuff to go out and get it done. You have to give him weapons, and the Raiders have addressed that. So good for Derek Carr, good on the Raiders, and four AFC West teams in the playoffs. Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly could see it. That is going to be quite the division race next year. Mitch, one more NFL news before we move on, and this one, some somber news that I'm sure anyone listening to this podcast probably already saw this, but Dwayne Haskins, the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback, former draft pick with the Washington football team, died this past week. He was struck by a car on the highway. This is the report. He was crossing the highway around 6:30 in the morning, struck by a dump truck. Details are kind of fuzzy as far as the situation. He was working out in South Florida with some of his Steelers teammates, including Najee Harris, Mitchell Trubisky. So, down there in the off season, getting some work in, and just a horrible accident and a situation there. Obviously our thoughts and prayers are with his family and friends and loved ones, and sad for a guy who was so young, 24 years old, and really obviously had so much life ahead of him, so much of a football career ahead of him in this new situation in Pittsburgh, which seemed to be going well. And so you hate to see that, obviously horrible news, and we did want to mention that and just give our condolences and wish the best for those around. And I've seen some very out of pocket things said about him or in reference to him with the news of his death, which is just extremely inappropriate and very unfortunate. And I hope that his family and friends don't have to see that and worry about that, and just know that the general world around them supports them at this time.
Yeah, there are some sickos out there that are going to say some terrible things about whoever you are. But this was a young man taken down far too early. And to those people that say those things, shame on them. And there's a reason people look down upon them in society. It's because they're not good people. So, this is a tragic thing that happened. Condolences, thoughts, prayers to the family and friends of Dwayne Haskins. Godspeed. Just a bad situation all in all. A terrible thing to hear about a young man cut down in his prime.
Yep, absolutely. Mitch, we've got a new spring football league coming, and it's coming this weekend. The USFL kicking off this weekend. First game, April 16th, this Saturday, between the New Jersey Generals and the Birmingham Stallions. And then we have three games on Sunday with the rest of the league, and we're off and running. I know we've talked about the USFL before. We talked about them when their jerseys were revealed, and we staked claims on favorite teams. I believe you are rooting for the Houston Gamblers. Am I mistaken? Right?
No, you are not mistaken. That is 100% correct. Yeah.
And I am rolling with the Pittsburgh Maulers because of the audacity of their color scheme. Purple and orange. I respect it. It's bold. We're bold. We're brash. We're not going away. We're the Maulers, baby. Let's go. So, So
that's a criminal name.
It's an awful name. But, we'll be following along. As we do anything in around the world of football, just because, we get so excited. The XFL also announced this week new head coaches, right? Their head coaches, which will start in 2023. That's the league now owned by Dwayne The Rock Johnson, movie star Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Some of the coaches were, I'm just rolling this off the top of my head from the XFL coaches, but I believe like Hines Ward, Bob Stoops. I mean, there were some really like interesting names in that pool of coaches for the XFL. That league will begin next spring, but the USFL this spring, we'll be following along. Looking forward to that.
Oh yeah. 100%. Very much looking forward to that. Kevin Sumlin, a former Texas A&M head coach, be leading my Houston Gamblers. Yum. I want to see the greatest intro of all time, which would be running out of the tunnel to Kenny Rogers, the Gambler. You got to know when to hold them, and just like,
I love that
fog going all over the place. Yes.
Fog
fucking fireworks. Why not? Yeah, why whatever. Not? Hype up the Gamblers. This is the Gamblers League to lose. Let's go Houston.
Okay. Bold, brash. You love to see it. Now, interestingly here, Mitch, and something fans or just, you know, casual listeners may not know. So these games are all played at one stadium in Birmingham, Alabama. So the league is centralized. All these games are playing at one stadium. So they're all staggered. But, yeah, everyone's located in one place. It's not, you know, like
this is at UAB's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not it's not like the what was the other, or the AAF, you know, or the even the XFL pre-COVID, you know, where they traveled. This will all be in one place. We'll see how the logistics work. I look forward to these spring leagues, Mitch, because I look at this from a draft perspective, and just the asset that would become a viable spring league for borderline draftable prospect guys who float around practice squads and have injury issues that don't get a full look, you know, this sort of resource for the NFL to pull talent from, guys to get second looks, third looks, maybe even that first look in the league because of their play in the USFL or XFL respectively. I think that is so huge and would be so big for more players to get shine and better player and better play to develop. So I do hope that these are successful. And we'll hope for success for the USFL. Hope at least last the season, right? The AAF couldn't last the season. COVID killed XFL 2.0. Well, can you make it through the season, USFL? And we'll call it a success. How about that?
Yeah, you have to make it at least one. Have to make it at least one.
It's a low standard.
And you've talked about it from a draft perspective. If you know history of the previous attempt at the USFL, Herschel Walker foregoed his draft pick with the NFL to become the first number one overall pick of the USFL. Yep.
So did BYU legend Steve Young.
Steve
number
Young,
one draft pick by the,
for
LA,
the LA Express.
Express. And he ended up, when that league was full, and he ended up shelling money out of his own paycheck to pay for bus rides for the team. And like they were using his paycheck to pay for the team. That's how down bad that league was towards the end.
If you want to watch a really good documentary on the USFL, watch the ESPN 30 for 30 Small Potatoes.
Oh, okay.
Small Potatoes, Who Killed the USFL? And great documentary on that. And it tells stories like that. The yeah. Steve Young, the Herschel Walkers, the Jim Kellys,
right?
Who was a former Houston Gambler. It tells all those kind of great USFL stories. So I, if you want some comprehensive history on that, that's a good one to watch.
There we go. Great recommendation, Mitch. Let's move on to a bit of NASCAR. We were in Martinsville this weekend, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. Martinsville. Yeah. Okay,
Martinsville. Good.
And, you know, I didn't watch the race. I don't really watch these, but I did see there was not in the Cup Series, but there was an exchange of fisticuffs. What is this? I thought this was a gentleman's game.
Well, if you know anything about racing, it is nothing but gentleman's game. Look, just to get through the Cup Series real quick, William Byron becomes the first multi-time winner this season, getting his second victory of the year here at Martinsville. Joey Logano second, Austin Dillon third, Ryan Blaney fourth, and Ross Chastain continues to stay consistent. Wow. Rallying off another top five for him. Again, another competitive race in the Cup Series. Nothing to really talk about much here. It was just a good competitive race. The real news comes in the Xfinity Series. So if you're new to racing, it's kind of like the AAA of NASCAR, right? This is where you groom the young talent. You'll see some veterans make starts there, you know, kind of one-off, two-off starts there. Actually, Dale Earnhardt Jr. Runs one race a year in the Xfinity Series. Martinsville happened to be his race this year, so he actually ran in this race. I believe he finished in the 11th position, so a good running for the legend. A confrontation between Sam Mayer of Junior Motorsports, drives for Dale Earnhardt, and Ty Gibbs, who is the grandson of legendary car owner and former NFL Super Bowl winning head coach Joe Gibbs. Confrontation happened with them on pit road after the race. It comes after a move that Sam Mayer made on that last lap in the second overtime start. Really shot a gap there at the end that was not there. I mean, really kind of muscled Joe or Ty Gibbs out of the way. And I have some takes about this. Look, Ty Gibbs is 19 years old. He's a young driver. He's got a lot to learn in this series still. And a lot of these young hotshots, they come in and they're hyper aggressive, right? You know, they're here to make a name for themselves. And so they want to do that at anything, you know, at all costs. Some of these young drivers need to learn, though, if you're going to race that way, expect to be raced that way back. And Sam Mayer, who is also a young and up-and-coming driver, either the same age or not that much older than Ty Gibbs, he might be 20 or 21. If you're, you know, he raced him the same way Ty Gibbs has raced other guys in the past, including Sam Mayer. So did Sam Mayer make a dirty move? No. Did he shoot a gap that he probably shouldn't have? Yes. Does Ty Gibbs have it coming pretty much based off his style of racing? Sure, he does. Because if you want to race someone a little bit aggressive, expect to get raced aggressive back. So that's my take on that as far as the on-track stuff. When it comes to the off-track stuff, the on-pit road stuff, look, Ty Gibbs, take your helmet off. Take your helmet off if you're going to confront someone.
This was my only gripe with it.
The joke is he's a smart guy for leaving his helmet on.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, look, dude, like at least square up and be man to man with him and take the helmet off and talk to him that way. Sam Mayer also needs to learn how to fight because he got his eye blackened up. Ty Gibbs kind of kicked his ass a little bit, got some good punches in. But look, at least go eye to eye, toe to toe, square to square with the guy. Like, take the helmet off and have a conversation. My understanding was Ty Gibbs was trying to have a conversation with him. Sam Mayer, obviously pissed about the way Ty Gibbs raced him earlier in the race, came over a little aggressive. Ty Gibbs didn't react well. He's still wearing his helmet. It's all a bad look. Sure. It's all a bad look. So there's faults on both sides, which there typically always is faults on both sides. So there's no winner in this situation, but Ty, take the helmet off, man. Just take the helmet off, will you?
You know, it's, I just, Mitch, that is just, it is not the look you want to be fighting some guy with your, like, what is such a, oh man, it is such a bad, like, come on. You're trying to fight somebody, you got your helmet on and they don't. I hate that. Yeah, I am 100% with you. Meet them on your level, like you race hard, this is the consequences, it is what it is. If that's your style, it's your style, right? But like, it comes with the territory then, right? You got to be able to, like, you know, handle this post game, post race kind of stuff, you know, and handle the people you work with on a week to week basis. You know, you've got to tote that line, and you know, he'll learn that, I'm sure, if he wants to continue to race this way. But I just, man, if you're gonna exchange fisticuffs, I mean, geez, like, get the thing off. It's lame.
It is lame. And you know, the off track stuff, I'm sure he'll learn, but like the on track stuff is the stuff that I think is most important to me. If you're going to race someone that way, expect to be raced that way.
Right.
And a lot of these young guys don't get that. There's a lot of self-entitled born with a silver spoon in their mouth type guys that don't learn that until much later. And I, you know, I think that Austin Dillon was one of those guys. Being the grandson of Richard Childress, he didn't learn that
right
until later in his career.
And we're talking about the grandson of Joe Gibbs, right? So I mean, it makes sense. Yeah. But hopefully, this will maybe be a good learning experience for him. Certainly not a good look, and not the type of news you want to be making, right? Maybe that is the type of news.
If you're a young up and comer, hell no.
Yeah.
No, you don't. Probably not.
Probably not the look you want. So there you go. NASCAR update as always, Mitch. Well done. It was Masters week, a great week at the Masters. It doesn't get any better than the Masters. And Scottie Scheffler, the story of 2022 in golf. We're only a couple months in, but it is Scotty Scheffler who has four wins now, his first four wins on the tour, all coming this year, all coming within the last 2 months, accumulating with the green jacket at Augusta this weekend. Wins the Masters at 10 under, three strokes up on second. And he was really in contention from the beginning with the 69 on the first day, kind of had the lead after the second day. And really after that, the whole field was sort of chasing Scotty, right? He had a multi-stroke lead heading into the final final round. And, you know, was able to coast on that Sunday, more down the stretch. I mean, there were certainly stretches where he was, you know, the title was certainly in doubt, but towards the stretch, the final holes, you know, kind of walking in there. And what a story for Scheffler, just 25 years old. And as I said, getting his first PGA Tour win earlier this year. In the last, oh, I got to pull this up. My dad texted me this. I thought this was a great stat. This is the last 2 months for Scotty Scheffler. He has made over $10 million in earnings in the last 2 months with the wins that he's earned at the Masters, at the WGC Match Play, Arnold Palmer Invitational, and the Phoenix Open. So congrats to Scotty Scheffler. Hell of a year so far. And I mean, this guy seems like one of those next young up and comers in golf, and certainly off to a hot start.
Yeah, I mean, what a 2022 this guy has had. I mean, from being, you know, from winning all four of his PGA Tour victories in the first 4 months of 2022 is outstanding. Look, the guy just played consistent golf. The weather was really not favorable for golf. It was windy. It was like a swirling wind. There was no kind of east to west, north to south kind of wind. It was very much swirling within those tall Georgia pines at Augusta National. And he just continued to play good, consistent golf. And you look at some of these scores, even, you know, even guys like Cam Smith, who finished fourth in this tournament, he shoots 68 on the first day. That's great. 74, 68, 73. Like, there was big discrepancies, and even more so as the further you go down the leaderboard of how this weather and how this wind affected guys. And Scotty Scheffler stayed pretty consistent. He just played good, consistent golf, stayed patient, made good shots, and wound up, you know, that was kind of going to be who could do that the best, was going to wind up winning this Masters just because of how inclement the weather was wind-wise.
Yeah, and I mean, there were only nine players under par for the tournament. He was the only player to be under par all 4 days. It just shows how, you know, like you said, how dominant he pretty much was all weekend and in control, and he's been in control this whole season. Great by him. I wanted to give a special shout out to Rory McIlroy. He finishes second in the tournament, minus seven, due to a 64 on Sunday. He was eight under that final Sunday round, playing alongside Colin Morikawa. And I mean, Rory was just on fire. It was incredible. It was so much fun to watch. And I mean, he started the day over par, ended at seven under, it shot up to second. I think he probably made himself like $1.5 million, right? Just by that final round and the difference in earnings, right? And it was just fun to see a guy that was that on his game. And you knew there was not really a shot that he would catch Scheffler unless Scheffler really blew up or something, but it was still fun to watch him just shoot up the leaderboard with that great score. And then on the final hole, he holes out from the bunker, and then his playing mate Morikawa also holes out from the bunker in just an incredible moment. I mean, no matter how the week goes for you at Augusta, if you end it like that on 18, I mean, you could just, at least you get to walk away with a smile and thank the golf gods on that one. But incredible Sunday for Rory, who's a guy who's won a green jacket before. And I certainly looked the part that final round.
I think we're golf guys now, because didn't you pick Scotty Scheffler as one of your guys to win?
I didn't, unfortunately, Mitch. I had, okay, Justin Spieth was my favorite, who did not even make the cut. So thanks for bringing that up, just to kind
sorry,
of
I thought it was, I thought you mentioned
Scheffler. It's fine. No, it was Spieth, and you had Colin Morikawa, who it finishes fifth at minus four with the great 67 on Sunday. We also, our other two guys that we mentioned respectively, I also had John Rahm, who was okay, made the cut, but nowhere close to the top of the leaderboard. And then you had Xander Schauffele, who also didn't make the cut. So kind of a mixed bag there, but Morikawa, that was a good pull for you. He finished fifth. That's a two-time major champion. That was a good pick.
Yeah, I mean, he plays good. He plays tough course as well, but also golf's such a crapshoot because then you see guys like Sungjae Im, who showed up out of nowhere and puts together a really good first round and hung around the top of the leaderboard for the entire weekend. So, you know, golf is such a crapshoot. You never know who's going to show up, but you have those few that you can kind of depend on. But yeah, I guess I could hang my hat on that, I did pick a top five guy at the Masters.
So. Yes. Yeah. Tiger, you know, had a great opening round, 71. Watching him that Thursday was just incredible. He just looked, it was a different Tiger, but it had moments of vintage Tiger. And when I mean different, he is much more passive, right? He doesn't have the physical ability to attack holes the way that he did, but you could see that wisdom, that the guts of Tiger come out at times. Really struggled on the weekend with back-to-back 78s on Saturday and Sunday. Finishes 13 over, 47th. Did make the cut, and I did say 100% chance he was going to make the cut, which he did. So thank you, Tiger, for that. But, you know, it was good to see him back. He's going to play at the Open, which will be played at St. Andrews at the Old Course. So that's a classic. That's a great venue. He's going to be back for the Open. He's not sure about the PGA Championship. He hasn't confirmed there one way or the other. But certainly fun to see him back at Augusta. Regardless of the outcome, it's a great weekend when Tiger's at the Masters.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that he was even there is a huge victory in itself. 14 months removed or 18 months removed, whatever it was, from his horrific car accident. That guy that was going to lose his leg, the fact that he's there is a victory in itself and winds up making the cut. So good for Tiger. Good for Tiger.
No doubt. All right, Mitch, we got to wrap the news up here with our weekly Kraken update as we wrap up the end of this NHL season. Four games since we last spoke about our Kraken. They dropped the Wednesday game from last week that evening to the St. Louis Blues, beat the Chicago Blackhawks, and then dropped back-to-back games to the Calgary Flames. Tonight's game against the Winnipeg Jets has been postponed. So they're 1-3 in this last stretch. Again, just couple weeks left in the season. What do we have? I might count 9 games left, including this Winnipeg game that will be made up. So just a handful of games left on the season. And we just want to finish strong, right? We don't want to finish in last, and we want to finish strong. That's all we're asking for from the Kraken, right, Mitch?
Right now, I am like, let's get on the road to the 101.
Yeah.
So if we finish last,
tank for Canadian superstars. That's what we're at.
If we finish last, I don't mind. The Canadians are going to be tough to catch in that category. But no,
Coyotes are actually last in points right now at 49. And then you have the Canadians at 51 and then our Kraken at 52. So third worst in the league.
That's right.
Not the worst worst.
Not the worst worst. So, you know, if we can get a top five pick, good on us.
Yes.
It's a building process. It's a building process.
The thing is, in the expansion era, in the way expansion drafts work, you're never going to acquire superstars from other teams, right? You're getting projects and you're getting veterans on the wrong side of their deal. And you're getting guys that have had a bunch of injuries and never amounted. Like, those are the types of players that teams make available in expansion drafts. So that is what you have to compile your roster for. We saw the Las Vegas Knights do an incredible job of that, so much so that it led to their Stanley Cup in that first year. But even then, that's not building towards your future. Top five draft picks in the NHL draft will certainly do that. So yes, Mitch, we're vying top three, top one, potentially. Let's go. But we don't want to be last in the league. Come on. I'd take the 102 if it meant we weren't the worst team in the league our first year. There's got to be some pride around that, you know?
There's got to be a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't want to be the worst in our first year. That just feels icky.
It does feel icky.
So that's all I say on that. Mitch, that's it for the news. You have a treat for us today. A forgotten all-star for me to try to guess today. I usually do this. Now it's my turn to be the guesser, you to be the presenter. I love it. Take it away, Mitch.
All right. So let's start off with hit number one. I spent my entire career with only two teams, both in the NFC. I will tell you that. Okay. Both
NFC. So a football teams. Player and spent time with two teams in the NFC. Okay.
Okay. I was a second round pick out of the University of South Carolina.
Okay.
And I only eclipsed 1,000 yards once in my career.
1,000 yards what? Receiving, passing, throw, like, receive from fumble yards, interception yards?
Would that give it away if I tell you?
I don't know.
1,000, okay. 1,000 yards receiving once.
1,000 yards receiving. Okay. So it's an NFL player who's played for two NFC teams only in their career. They're a second-round pick out of South Carolina, and they've only had 1,000 yards receiving once in their career so far.
Mm-hmm.
Is their career ongoing? Is that too much of a hint? If so, don't answer.
I will give you that answer if you miss the first
time. Okay. All right. Fair enough. So I'm thinking about South Carolina second-round picks. 1,000 yards receiving.
Only once.
So it is a wide receiver or tight end. Because my heart said Mike Davis. I think he played at South Carolina, the running back. But
he did play at South Carolina.
Yeah, but we're not looking for a running back. So I'm just going to go right off the bat with my first pick, my initial pick, what feels right in my heart, and go with Deebo Samuel.
It is not Deebo Samuel.
Okay. Not Deebo Samuel, who did play at South Carolina, I'm pretty sure.
I like how this is like our own version of Weddle.
It is good. By the way, how's Weddle been? I know you told me you picked that up. We talked about it.
It's a lot of fun. I'm good. Not going to lie.
Have you played on a hard mode yet?
No. So I was just kind of getting introduced, and I think I'm like 8 for 8. So like.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. The hard mode just opens it up to like any player. It gives you more guesses, but it's like any player in the league, like any position. So instead of doing skill positions, it's like I could be an offensive lineman. It could be a backup safety. It's pretty intense. I played it a couple times. I was like, I know stuff, but this is like a lot of work. So, I got to stick with it. Okay. So Deebo Samuel. Deebo Samuel, South Carolina, second round pick. Braylon Edwards.
He didn't play at South Carolina, but no, that's not the right answer.
No. Okay.
Okay. So, sorry, what was my hit? If his career was going ongoing or not. His career is not ongoing.
Okay. So it is a former player.
Yes. He is retired.
Can I ask, was he just a one-time all-star?
Yes. Yeah. He was a one-time all-star.
Just a one-time all-star.
Or pro bowler in this instance.
Right. Pro bowler. Okay, so South Carolina second round pick played for two NFC teams. One time Pro Bowler. Can I get one more hint just to narrow this a bit for me so I can make a good first guess? What's the era of the NFL that we're talking about? Like early 2000s, late 90s? Like where is this player?
Mid aughts to mid teens.
Okay. So in the last 10, 20 years.
His career ended in the last 10 years.
Okay. I'm going to go. I don't think this player played for South Carolina, but I'm going to go with Roddy White.
That's a really good guess, but that is incorrect.
Man. All right, Mitch, who was the forgotten all-star this week?
Do you want one more? I feel like you're headed in the right direction.
I don't know if I'm going to get it, to be honest with you.
Okay. All right. Well, this is a guy that honestly I would understand if you forgot about, but this is Sidney Rice.
Sidney Rice. Okay.
Wide receiver for the Minnesota Vikings and the Seattle Seahawks. His lone Pro Bowl season, 2009, 121 targets with 83 receptions, or 1,312 yards and 8 touchdowns. I got to be honest with you, man. Had you asked me 5 years ago, I probably would have remembered the name Sidney Rice. But I had completely flushed him out of my memory. And then I saw a TikTok, as one would, on guessing this player. And it was, they were showing a picture of him. And I saw the picture and I was like, oh, that's Sidney Rice. And I was like, where the hell did I pull that name out of? Like, it just unlocked something in my brain that I forgot this guy existed. But yeah, Sidney Rice, second round draft pick out of the University of South Carolina to the Minnesota Vikings. Had a pretty forgettable career. In fact, outside of his 1,000-yard receiving season, never received over 500 yards in any other season in his career.
Wow.
Which was surprising to me. And he had
1,300 that year.
Yeah. That's, and you know, crazy. What? The guy, like, when I think of Sidney Rice, I remember that guy being pretty good.
Yeah.
But he was oft injured and really had a tough time staying healthy, retired after his age 27 season. So Sidney Rice is the forgotten all-star for this week.
Wow. Well done, Mitch. That was a great one. A great poll there. And a guy that to be honest, completely forgotten about and no idea he existed until I did. That's why we do the segment. That's why the segment exists, right? Because there are many forgotten all-stars out there that we love to highlight. Well done there. I'll have to bring one for you next time. Give you another challenge to face. Mitch, let's move past the news here, and we're going to transition into some NBA playoff talk. As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, play-in tournament going on currently. Right now, the Charlotte Hornets and the Atlanta Hawks are playing. The Hawks lead the Charlotte Hornets by 8 halftime. The winner of that game will go on to Cleveland to face the Cleveland Cavs for the 8 seed. Later on tonight, we have the Spurs and the Pelicans that will play for the opportunity to play the Clippers for the spot at the 8 seed in the West. That's kind of where we're at in the play-in tournament right now. The Brooklyn Nets and the Minnesota Timberwolves both won their games last night, securing the 7 seed in their respective conferences. So the only sort of matchup we're waiting for is that 8 seed with a couple games remaining there. So we're going to start our focus on the play-in tournament, then look at the playoff picture as a whole and give a little preview on the playoff matchups and ultimately who we think will go through. But Mitch, I want to start with these games going on, or the game going on right now, rather, the Hawks and the Hornets, two young teams. I do like this Hornets team a lot, but we talked about this Hawks team and how they would be very dangerous for anybody to catch in the first round of the playoffs, right? Yeah, they're going to be a low seed, but this was a team that made the Eastern Conference Finals last year, right? And had an incredible run led by Trae Young, who had a fantastic season. And in the playoffs, anything can happen. A team with that kind of experience should not be, overlooked. I guess my question for you here is, Mitch, can the Hawks beat the Hornets and then also go to Cleveland and get a win over the Cavs to make it to the playoffs?
100%. I mean, why would they? In the East, I think we talked about this recently, like the East is so much closer and the competition is so much stiffer in the East. I don't see a reason why the Hawks can't do that. I mean, they're going to go in and play an 8 seed in Cleveland. They got to get past Charlotte, which is a completely beatable team, a very competitive team, but totally beatable. And then you go into a series with Cleveland that is definitely winnable for him. I think that it's a close one, but I think that Atlanta is capable of it. I couldn't pick a winner right now, but I think Atlanta definitely capable of beating Cleveland.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm confident in the Hawks just because of that experience. Right. And I think that'll pay off for them in the end. I really like this Cleveland team who's just been a great story this year, right? Had a great year. Darius Garland emerging as an all-star. Kevin Love having a fantastic season with this young team, and Evan Mobley, this rookie, just, really showing what makes him so special as that top three pick. So I like this Cleveland team, but I would lead Atlanta if they're able to get past Charlotte here and ultimately go on to face Miami in that opening round. But certainly interesting to see. Either way, I love this play-in tournament, Mitch. I love this play-in tournament idea because it gives an opportunity, and it did this last year, and it does, and it's doing it this year, gives an opportunity for these young stars on teams that don't often get the TV time, don't often get the national spotlight, an opportunity to show just how good they are in a oversaturated NBA that is so full of talent that guys that are putting up 25 points a game get overlooked, right? Like a Darius Garland, who was an all-star this year. I bet you the casual NBA fan has no idea about this kid. But he was excellent against Brooklyn, was going toe-to-toe with Kyrie Irving in that play-in game. And what a great opportunity for him and Evan Mobley and these young guys to show their stuff. LaMelo Ball versus Trae Young tonight. I mean, and then later on, you've got DeJounte Murray and the Spurs and Brandon Ingram in this Pelicans team. It is the one thing I like about this play-in tournament. It gives teams incentive at the end of the season to actually win games as opposed to lose, which has been a good effect of the play-in tournament. And it gives opportunities for guys to shine in these moments. As far as the Eastern Conference goes, my favorite right now to get this 8 seed would be the Hawks. Are you on the same page there?
Yeah, I think it's probably the Hawks. Yeah.
Okay. As far as the West goes, Mitch, again, San Antonio at New Orleans tonight. Winner will take on the Clippers. I do believe the Clippers will be the favorite in this. Paul George is back playing. It seems a little healthier than they were throughout the season, and ultimately very experienced. I mean, Clippers made it to the Western Conference Finals. Speaking of, you know, like the Atlanta Hawks, I mean, this was a team that made it to the Western Conference Finals last year, right? And so certainly that experience should bode well for them against either New Orleans or San Antonio. So I would say I'm feeling confident the Clippers will secure the 8 seed for a Western Conference Finals rematch in the opening round between the 1 seed Suns and the 8 seed Clippers. That could be pretty fun.
Yeah, I like the Clippers as well. Look, the Pelicans and the Spurs are definitely inferior teams to the Clippers. Doesn't just show in their regular season record, but I think the on-court product definitely shows as well that, you know, the Clippers are the superior team here, and we should have a fun series 1-8 between Phoenix and Los Angeles.
Yeah, that certainly would be fun. And Mitch, let's go ahead with some playoff series previews here. We'll save the 1 seed series for next week, as we actually know those 8 seed opponents there. But let's start in the Eastern Conference. Let's start with the 2-7 matchup. We've got the Boston Celtics as the 2 seed. They'll face the Brooklyn Nets as the 7 seed, who beat Cleveland last night to earn that 7 seed. And Mitch, you know, we've got Kyrie back, Kevin Durant playing well. Ben Simmons is still questionable at this point. I believe he's out for the whole first round. I don't know if that was confirmed. I know the play-in tournament was confirmed. My guess is that Brooklyn hopes to get him back at some point, maybe during this first round. But is this Brooklyn would have been the favorite going into the season, right? Healthy with James Harden, all that stuff. That iteration of the team would have been the favorite to win the East. Now they're the 7 seed and likely an underdog against Boston. Should we be buying into this Brooklyn can upset Boston narrative, or should we be buying Boston in the second half of this season playing at an extremely high level and just being the better team as the 2 seed?
I mean, you have to buy Boston, sell on Brooklyn. I mean, Brooklyn's just their inability to stay healthy, the drama that surrounded that entire team the whole year, the trading of James Harden, the lack of availability from Ben Simmons. Boston has just played so well that I think it's foolish to take Brooklyn here to upset, even though they would come into the season, I guess, as the favorite. I never was really a big believer in that super team combination anyway. Seemed like too many conflicting egos, but Boston's playing absolutely fantastic as of late, especially over the last second half of the season. Boston should run away with this one. In fact, I'll give them Boston 5.
Boston with the gentleman sweep. Okay. All right. I'm going to take the Celtics in 6, Mitch, because I do think the Celtics will win this series. And I do think there's a reason why they are the 2 seed now. They are the 2 seed with the exact same record as the 3 and 4 seed, right? But this was a team, again, down the stretch, very strong. Robert Williams injured right now. That is surely going to hurt, but I don't know if it'll hurt them against Brooklyn. Might hurt later down the road, depending on who they have to play, like Milwaukee. But I think for Brooklyn, they're going to be all right. And I just can't. I'm with you. I don't think we can trust this Nets team that hasn't been able to play together while healthy, right? We have no idea what this team will look like or what they're even capable of. So I push back on the notion of buying Brooklyn. It certainly could go 7. I mean, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving is enough to like be afraid of if you're the Celtics, no doubt. But ultimately, this Boston Celtics team plays incredible defense, suffocating defense. And I think ultimately they're going to have enough to get it done in this first round. So I'm going Boston in 6. You're going Boston in 5, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's go to the 3-6, Mitch. We got the 3 seed Milwaukee Bucks taking on the 6 seed Chicago Bulls. A great season for Chicago, who made all those acquisitions, right? Traded for Nikola Vucevic and then signing DeMar DeRozan. Signing Lonzo Ball, Alex Caruso, pairing them with some of the young players they have, like Patrick Williams. And this team had a successful year, 46-36, earning the 6 seed. But man, what a tough draw in the first round to get the defending champion Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo. That is just, honestly, it's borderline unfair, but it is what it is. I'm taking Milwaukee in the gentleman's sweep here. I'm very high on the Bucks. I'm not so high on the way the Chicago played down the stretch. And I think come playoff time, they will be pretty one-dimensional with a lot of DeRozan mid-range game. That's not going to work. So give me Milwaukee in 5.
I liked Chicago. If you asked me early season, I really like Chicago. Chicago looks so good. But like you said, down the stretch did not play as well. Milwaukee's the defending champs. They have a top 2 best player in the NBA right now, and Giannis on their side. Give me Milwaukee in 5. Give me Milwaukee in 5. I like the Bucks with the gentleman sweep here.
Okay. Mitch, one of the more intriguing matchups of this opening round of the NBA playoffs, in my opinion, is this 4-5 matchup here between the Philadelphia 76ers and the Toronto Raptors, the 4 seed Sixers hosting the Raptors, which Toronto just really turned it on down the stretch of the season, right? Really led by their rookie Scotty Barnes, who's just playing at a very high level. And, you know, despite moving on from Kyle Lowry and sort of taking this team in a new direction, Nick Nurse has this Toronto team playing really well, and they were able to get up to the 5 seed. This is a rematch of the Eastern Conference Finals a few years ago where Kawhi Leonard hit that, or sorry, this, no, that was in the Eastern Conference Final, or maybe it was the Eastern Con, either way. I'm not editing that all out because that's horrible. This is a rematch of the playoffs a couple years ago. That was the series where Kawhi hit that dagger in the corner right over the Sixers. No Kawhi on this team, a very different Sixers team in a lot of ways. But Mitch, I'm going with the upset here. I'm taking the Raptors in 7. I'm taking Toronto in 7 here because I love Joel Embiid, and I think he's had a fantastic season, and he'll likely be the MVP, but I don't trust James Harden, don't trust Doc Rivers, and this Toronto team is just playing so well, and there has to be an upset. There's going to be an upset here somewhere. There always is. Where is it going to be? I'm calling it here with the 4-5. Give me Toronto in 7.
I mean, a safe one to say, oh, yeah, the 5's going to upset the 4, Dallin.
Okay, yeah, but we're talking about a Philly team that has the same record as the 2 seed, right?
So, I'm just giving you a hard time. Yeah, no, if there is a spot for an upset, it would be the 4-5 here matchup. It really would be. I'm gonna take Philly in 7, though. I think that with the contributions of James Harden and Joel Embiid, that this might just overwhelm this really scrappy, good Toronto team just a little bit too much. I like Toronto. I don't like him enough to beat Philly though in the first round. So, give me Philly in 7 in a very hard fought series.
Okay, Mitch, let's just talk a little hypothetical here before we move to the West. Miami's the one seed, 53-29 on the season. They'll face the eight seed of either the Cavs, the Hawks, or the Hornets. Is there any, we kind of talked about this before, but any scenario you feel like they could be upset? I know we were high on the Hawks, and I will say, if it is Atlanta, I think that could be a 6 or 7 game series with the Hawks. I think the Hawks would really give Miami a run for their money. But no matter who makes it out, I'm not picking against the Heat right now. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I like Atlanta to get that 8 seed. But I think it's 5 or 6. I think it's okay. 5 or 6. I don't think they upset Miami here.
Yeah. All righty, Mitch, let's move to the Western Conference, and we'll start with the 2-7 here in the West. That is the Memphis Grizzlies, 56-26, the out of nowhere, 8 seed last year in the playoffs, 2 seed this year. Ja Morant, this young Grizzlies squad, just one of the best seasons of stories of the NBA season so far. And they're taking on one of the other great stories of the season, the Minnesota Timberwolves, who make the playoffs 46-36. They beat the Clippers right last night to earn the 7th seed and a shot at the Grizzlies. And these are two young teams with young stars. Ja Morant, Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, this Jaren Jackson Jr. This is going to be a fun series. And I've actually seen a couple people pick Minnesota in this, which I thought was very surprising. Memphis had a better record than any team in the Eastern Conference, right? Like, they would have been the one seed by 3 games in the East. And they've won with or without their star in Ja Morant. And that has been most impressive. I think 22-2 or something like that without Ja Morant this year. And they've been incredible without him. So I'm taking Memphis, but I'm going to give it 6 games. I think this will be a competitive series. Karl Anthony Towns, I think, is going to have a lot of success against this Memphis team. They don't have a large presence down low. Jonas Valanciunas is going to get eaten alive by Cat. And I think he's going to pose some challenges, but I'm taking the Grizzlies. Give me Memphis in 6.
I'm going to give Minnesota a puncher's chance here. That's an old boxing term where if you can land one hook to knock someone out, you give them a puncher's chance. That might be the one shot that they have to get it done. I'll give Minnesota a puncher's chance to beat Memphis because I believe this is a really, really good team. But the Memphis Grizzlies, like you said, 22-2 without Ja Morant, have played exceptionally well without their biggest star. Give me Memphis. And even in the puncher's chance, I think it's still going 7.
Okay.
I like Memphis in 7 over the Timberwolves.
Yeah, that should just be a fun series just because of the young teams, young stars. This is guys that casual NBA fans aren't super familiar with. That Ja Morant at this point, definitely. But like Anthony Edwards is still an emerging guy. Cat, so overrated all these years that he's overlooked, all these years in Minnesota. Excited for those guys to get some shine in what will be a fantastic matchup. Mitch, the 3-6 matchup. Golden State Warriors at the 3 seed, 53 wins on the season for Golden State. They will take on Denver, 48 wins for the Nuggets, led by Nikola Jokic, and only Nikola Jokic, right? Jamal Murray, MPJ, Michael Porter Jr. I mean, all these guys have been injured this year, and Jokic has carried this Nuggets team, avoiding the play-in tournament, earning the 6 seed and a shot at the Warriors. But I think Jokic is going to feast. I think there's not really a lot of matchup here that's going to be a problem for him. The issue is that the rest of the team is just not good enough around him. And I don't think it'll matter. I think he's going to average like 35-12-8. And I don't think it's going to matter in the slightest. I am taking the Warriors in 5, Mitch. This Denver team is just too hobbled at this point. And even if Murray and any of the guys are coming back, not with enough time and not with enough experience to come in and really compete with this Warriors team, I don't think. So Warriors in 5 and a gentleman's sweep into what has just been an admirable effort by this Nuggets team and by Jokic, but just a tough season for Denver. Can't stay healthy.
Yeah, poor timing for Denver. I mean, they got hurt, and it's just not going to be enough to beat Golden State with the perimeter. Like you said, Jokic might dominate the paint the entire series. How long that series goes is probably not very long. Give me Golden State in 5. to absolutely dominate on the perimeter shooting, the offensive side of the ball, and really their perimeter defense is really going to shut them down because they're so banged up.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Mitch, the 4-5 matchup here. We got the Dallas Mavericks, 52 wins for Luka Doncic and the Mavericks, and they'll be hosting the Utah Jazz, 49 wins on the season for the Jazz. I think one of the biggest notes about this series right now, Mitch, is that Luka Doncic tweaked his ankle, knee, I'm not 100% sure, but tweaked something the final game of the season, and it is still sort of TBD on his full status right now. I do expect him to play, right? It's the playoffs, and I think knowing Luka will play through it, but he will certainly be hobbled in this series and could be more than hobbled, could be like 40-50% depending on how major this injury is, and it certainly dampens the chances for the Dallas Mavericks in this first round. I do like the acquisitions, the changes that they made to the roster. Spencer Dinwiddie is a solid addition. I do like some of these changes for the Mavericks. I think I would have picked Dallas at this point if it weren't for the Luka injury. But Luka being hobbled really opens the door for the Jazz, and the Jazz have certainly been disappointing this year, blowing fourth quarter leads consistently. The number one seed last year and weren't able to capitalize on it, losing in the second round. And I think there's going to be people down on the Jazz, but I think they get past this first round matchup. I'm going to give the Jazz in 7 to upset Dallas and get on to the second round.
So 2-5-4 upsets for you.
Yep. Yep.
All right. I'm going to stick with Dallas in 7. I'm going to stick with Dallas in 7, even with the, we've seen the Jordan flu game. Maybe we have the Luka ankle game and he comes out and he puts on the performance of a lifetime on a hobbled ankle. I like Dallas in 7 here.
Okay. And then Mitch, finally, we talked about this briefly and we even mentioned this last week, but there's nobody coming out of the play-in tournament that makes you question the Phoenix Suns at all, right? Unless, and I will throw this the only caveat to the Suns not making it past this 8 seed, is if Kawhi Leonard magically comes back and is ready to play first round of the playoffs. And the Clippers have Kawhi and PG and Reggie Jackson and everybody's healthy again. All of a sudden now that becomes an intriguing series to watch for the Suns. But barring anything crazy on that front, Suns are going to be the heavy favorite to sweep or gentlemen sweep whoever comes out of this play-in tournament.
Yeah, no one's beating the Suns. No one's beating the Suns.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, it's a road to the finals for them. I mean, they're calling it already.
Just pave the road.
This team is that good. I think.
Okay. But there you go. All righty. Well, we look forward to watching it again. Play-in tournament games tonight. We're recording this April 13th, and then later this week, and then on Saturday, the beginning of the NBA playoffs. Saturday, April 16th. And so next week, we'll update you where those series are and continue to follow over the next couple months until we crown the NBA champion. Well, Mitch, that's going to do it for the NBA playoff preview. We're going to take a break and hit a mid-roll. And when we come back, 2022 NFL mock draft coming up. Mitch and I alternating picks throughout the first round of the NFL draft. So stick around and we'll be right back.
Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening, but if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for? Welcome back in to the Sports Hour with Mitchmo and Dallin. Hope you enjoyed that little mid-roll there. Remember, be like Sammy and David. What the hell are you waiting for? Go ahead and get at us on anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys. Second half of the show here, NFL mock draft 1.0. Well, 2.0 if you go to the website. The website is at thesportshourguys.wordpress.com. Dallin has a very awesome first round mock draft up there that I recommend you guys go read. Really, really awesome stuff. But our first on-air mock draft that we'll do this year, we're only a couple of weeks removed from the NFL draft. So, Dallin, it is time we start giving our hottest of takes, maybe our juiciest of predictions when it comes to the NFL draft of 2022.
Well, who doesn't love juicy predictions? You know, that's the only way I take my predictions is juicy. Yeah, you know,
medium rare juicy predictions. Yeah,
you know, it's fun. We're gonna do a little alternating picks back and forth. Mitch has got the odds, and I have the evens, and we're just gonna go back and forth, make our picks, kind of talk about the prospects and the fits that we like and don't like, and go through this first round again. Very excited for the NFL draft, just 2 weeks away. This seems like a good time to do that. So, Mitch, you're on the clock at the 101. So, I guess take it away, buddy. What are the Jags doing at the top?
I want to clarify one thing. Are we doing what they think they will do or what we think they should do?
I think what you would do. What you would do. Yes. Okay. What you think they should do, what you would do. We're not predict. We don't know what they're going to do. We're not insiders. So, we're doing what we would do if we were the GM of all these respective teams. So Mitch, you're the GM of the Jags. You've had to deal with Urban Meyer. I'm so sorry. Horrible decision-making on your regard, but that's okay. Second chance is here. And who's the 101?
Look, we got some stuff. We got some young stuff around Trevor Lawrence. We have the young quarterback. We just spent a number one overall pick on him. We get the number one overall pick again. We have to protect him. So give me Evan Neal, the tackle from the University of Alabama. Roll damn Tide.
Okay.
This just seems like just the right thing to do. I don't know what the fit would be like for that. It seems like it would be a perfect fit because they need anything offensively on the offensive line. So protecting Trevor Lawrence should be the number one key here. Give me Evan Neal.
Yeah, this is you know, this is an interesting pick, Mitch, to start off, because the consensus, like by far at this point, post-free agency is edge Hutchinson, and maybe you hear some rumors around Trevon Walker, the edge out of Georgia, who I'm sure we'll get to shortly. But after signing Cam Robinson to the franchise tag and they have Juwan Taylor at tackle, the need on offensive line is not as apparent. But that being said, I do not believe that Aiden Hutchinson has the type of high-end talent potential that Evan Neal or Ike Mekwonu would have at the 101. So if you're chasing the highest heights with that 101, thinking about building your franchise, I'm with you. I kind of think the pick is Neal. So respect for it. I love it.
Yeah, it's got to be. It's got to be an off either Mekwonu or a Neal. It's got to be one of them.
Well, you set me up, Mitch, at the 102 for the perfect scenario for the Detroit Lions, who are on the clock at the 102. And the hometown hero is on the board, and they are sprinting in this card for Aiden Hutchinson at the 102. And again, I think Hutchinson is going to be really good. Like, he's more than, if he goes 101, I'm not going to be shocked. I'm not saying he's overrated or whatnot, but I just don't see the need as much for the Jaguars, for the Lions, who need anything except for offensive line, right? That is the one place they have invested heavily, is on the offensive line. And sure, they've paid money in free agency to defensive linemen, but certainly haven't built in the draft that the way they could here. So to me, Michigan product, the marriage is too easy. It's too easy to pass up here, I think, if you're the Lions, if Hutchinson falls to number two.
Yeah, I mean the storybook writes itself, right? It has to be Aiden Hutchinson to Detroit. Love the pick. And you know what? He's got a high ceiling. He's got a really high ceiling, but that ceiling is not as high as Evan Neal's, and the floor is a little bit lower than Evan Neal's. Like you were just talking about, you know, the overall potential of what those two players could be, but love the pick for Detroit. Number three, we got Houston. And I think that you could really go anywhere here, right? You don't have much to protect at the quarterback position. As much as I like Davis Mills, I like Davis Mills just fine. He's a young quarterback, but you know, are you really going to invest that much into Davis Mills? Probably not. I think you start on the defensive end. I think that's where great teams start their build. And I think it would be, I think that what we saw with them do with Jadeveon Clowney, how they really squandered him at that edge position. I think that they don't make that mistake again. So I'm going to go Kyle Hamilton, the safety out of Notre Dame, number three to the Houston Texans. Start with the secondary, defend the pass. It's a passing league. Have that good guy to be a center fielder for you. Big time playmaker. I really like Kyle Hamilton to the Houston Texans here.
You know, I really love the fit with Hamilton with the Texans, mainly because Hamilton is the type of prospect, and it's the reason why, Mitch, in reality, he's probably not going in the top three of the actual NFL draft. He may even fall out of the top 10 because he is such a unique player at a position of low value that you have to be willing to fit your defense around him. He is a centerpiece type player. 6'4 at safety, but he's not just a free safety. He's going to come up and play in the box. You want him for his versatility, guarding tight ends, right? Dropping back, doing all the things that he can do. So you have to have the open flexibility to doing that. Not every team can fit a player like that onto their roster, but when you have needs at literally every position, you've got a blank slate. You can do whatever you want. So why not take a shot on a guy like Kyle Hamilton, who could be generational and could, you know, transcend anything any of these guys do, as solid as all these other picks could be. So I think it's a no-brainer for Houston, especially now that they have two picks. They'll pick up and they have the other one at 13, right? Because of the Deshaun Watson trade. So you can also address another position there. So why not take the shot on Hamilton? Love it at three, Mitch. Love it.
Oh, thank you.
Love it. All right. Now I've got the Jets at four. And this is a great scenario for me. This is just what I would want if I'm a New York Jets fan. You know, Jets, you see a lot in the secondary with this 104. You'll see even defensive end like a Trevon Walker, Kayvon Thibodeau, if he falls, which Thibodeau is on the board here and very intriguing. But I love building the offensive line, and the Jets offensive line is good, but it could be better. So give me Ike Ekwonu, the tackle out of North Carolina State. You've got Mekhi Becton, right? But he's Mekhi Becton insurance. He hasn't been able to stay healthy. If he never pans out, you've got a guy. You've got George Fant on the other side of right tackle. That's awesome. He's an average tackle, but he could be better. And at the worst case scenario, you're moving Ekwonu inside at guard. He's going to be one of the best guards in the NFL. So it's a win-win for the Jets to take Ekwonu here at the 104 and just absolutely solidify that offensive line for Zach Wilson.
I love it. I love it. That would have been my pick. And I think that as we move on to the pick number five, we're going to see a similar trend here with me, at least what I would do. So look, is Daniel Jones the guy? We don't know, but we know if they don't go get a quarterback in this draft, they're going to be going after the one in 2023. I think you have to solidify the offensive line. Give Daniel Jones, if you really think he's the guy, give him the best opportunity. So I like Charles Cross to go the tackle out of Mississippi State to go number five overall to the New York Giants. Look, solidify up front. Saquon's coming back from a couple of injury plagued seasons. You have to find out who your guy is at quarterback. Give them the best opportunity. We know that a good offense starts up front with the hog mollies, the five guys up front. I like Charles Cross to go to number five to the Giants.
Yeah, I like that, Mitch. And I think the Giants, you know, especially with 5 and 7 here, you're really looking either side of the line, right? Offensive line, defensive line. If there's an edge there you love, you take them. If there's an offensive lineman there you love, you take them. And then at 7, you get what you get. Maybe you trade back. They'll have a lot of options there and more to do potentially. But if you walk away with the Giants, offensive lineman, defensive lineman with that 5 and 7, I think you're feeling pretty happy. And Charles Cross is certainly going to add to, you know, on the other side of Andrew Thomas, that's going to be great tackle tandem for the New York Giants. Mitch, you've left me in a bad spot for the Panthers. And this with the 6th pick is tough, right? And we've talked about this off air, but I am team trade back for Carolina. And we're not going to trade back in this exercise. But if we could, I would absolutely be trading back right now. And there'd be many suitors to trade up and maybe take the first quarterback off the board, or like a Derek Stingley, Kayvon Thibodeau, who's already fallen to number 6. And maybe you're really intrigued by that guy. So there could be some suitors. But ideally, if the Panthers are going to stay at 6, I want them to take one of the tackles, right? Neil or Kwanu, or even Charles Cross. But all three of those guys are off the board already, which leaves me in a spot where the only viable thing is to reach on another offensive lineman or take the quarterback.
Yeah.
So, Mitch, we're going to do the only other thing in this situation that I would be okay, and I say okay, not happy, but okay with the Panthers doing if they were to stay at number 6. And we're going to take the quarterback, and we're going to take the quarterback with the highest upside to be a superstar. And we're going to take the quarterback out of Liberty, Malik Willis, the running back with the cannon arm, Malik Willis. I would love to take an offensive lineman. I'd love to trade back, pick up some day two picks in the second or third round. You know, take an offensive lineman or even a quarterback later and add more. But if we're staying at 6 and the Panthers can't get one of these top tackles, I say take Malik Willis and hope for the best. Do not take Kenny Pickett, because at best he's going to be Andy Dalton, and that doesn't get you anywhere. And
oh, that's so disrespectful.
And guess what, Mitch? And that's guess so what, Mitch? If we're going to do that, Baker Mayfield and Jimmy Garoppolo are both available right now. Why would you take Kenny Pickett over any of those guys right now? I don't see that. I don't understand that. So if you're going to take a quarterback at 6, take Malik Willis, highest upside with that running ability for Willis and the rocket arm, and the Panthers would ruin him. The Panthers would ruin him. He'd become a bust. It would be horrible, but that's the only option. So I'm taking Malik Willis at 6, and I don't feel great about it.
Look, yeah, I wouldn't feel great about it either. Honestly, when you said reach, I thought you were going to go for like a Bernard Raymond or a Trevor Penning.
Penning would be the guy that I like out of Northern Iowa.
I thought you were like, I'm going to reach and get him into the top 10, which I wouldn't hate either. He's got small school bias against him. We've seen the tape. Guy's absolutely dominant. So like, that's where the reach I thought you were going. I didn't think you were going to reach for Malik Willis. Yeah.
We're going to go quarterback. And listen, I'm calling it right now. Willis is going in the top 10 of this draft, guaranteed, right? He's not getting out of the top 10 of the NFL draft. And he could go even higher than 6. There is a lot of rumblings around him and the Detroit Lions at number 2. Legitimate rumblings. We'll see if they pull the trigger or if that's a smokescreen by the Lions to get somebody to trade up for him. But either way, I think Willis goes top 10, and 6 is kind of the natural spot, whether it's the Panthers selecting at 6 or somebody else trading up to 6 to come get him. Either way, I think that's the spot for Willis here. And we're not doing trade back, so I got to take it. But now you're on the clock with the Giants again, Mitch, at number 7.
I mean, we addressed the offensive line. We got Charles Cross. Now we have to go address edge. And there are two guys here that I feel totally comfortable taking, in Trayvon Walker or Kayvon Thibodeau. You know, if I got to give the slight edge, though, based on health, I have to take Trayvon Walker here. I think that Kayvon, you know, coming off the injury, there's just a little bit of an edge for a guy that's been healthy and has stayed healthy. Give me Trayvon Walker here over Kayvon Thibodeau. And Thibodeau's continued to slide. This was a guy at the beginning of the college football season that was consensus number 1.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's certainly fallen off since. And I think, you know, and listen, I there's some fair, you know, criticism of Thibodeau. And anytime you're anointed that early, the whole goal in the draft process is no longer to justify you at number 1, but break you down as to why you're not number 1, right? And we've seen that with Thibodeau. Some of it is justified, but I think a lot of it is unjustified. Him falling out of the top 10 to me is ludicrous. I would be shocked if he didn't. I think it'd be a steal for anybody who got him outside of the top 10, even outside of the top 5, I think will be a great value. But between him and Trayvon Walker, certainly a good pick there for Walker, and the right position to be addressing. Don't think you really go wrong with either of those picks for the Giants, Mitch. I'm on the clock at number 8 with the Atlanta Falcons. Falcons in an interesting spot. No more Matt Ryan there. Marcus Mariota. I don't think they go quarterback at eight unless Willis is on the board and nobody's taking him and they think, why the heck not take a shot? But I'm going to go with the first corner off the board and a guy who could be a generational type prospect, Derek Stingley Jr. out of LSU. Oh,
not the guy I thought you were going to go.
Really? Are you thinking Sauce?
I was thinking Sauce. Yeah. See,
I love Sauce Gardner. There's a couple teams I like better for fit with Sauce Gardner. So maybe hanging on to those for maybe a little bit later. But Stingley, if you would have if we were talking the 2019 season, his freshman season at LSU, he could have been the number one pick in that draft as a freshman. He was incredible. And then injuries hit and he really never was that same kind of guy, but he has that potential to be an all-time cornerback prospect. He put on that type of tape as a freshman in college. If he can get back to that, he will be a steal at number eight. He's like a top three type talent in this draft. If it wasn't for some downplay in the last couple of years and some, you know, effort issues, you know, post championship season with LSU. And so Stingley falls to eight here, but I love it for Atlanta. I love the fit and I think he will be great. Him and AJ Terrell, Mitch, that's a great combo to build around on that Atlanta defense.
I mean, it is good. It is good. I because he's had injury issues as well. And then the lack of effort deal post championship is a little concerning for me.
Sure. And that's why he's fallen out of the top three and five, where there was a lot that viewed him, you know, in that range.
In fact, there are two guys that would take over Derek Stingley.
Listen, Sauce Gardner, the cornerback out of Cincinnati, and Trent McDuffie, the Washington corner, are both excellent. I think all three of them should be top 15 picks. I think I wouldn't be shocked if any one of them was CB1 off the board. But for me, Atlanta, Stingley just made a lot of sense. If they
were
any of those cornerbacks there, though, I don't think that's a bad pick. So
no, I get you. I get you definitely. Look, I got number nine, Seattle. Quarterbacks got to be addressed. Sounds like that Drew Lock might be the guy over there in Seattle. And it sounds like they're willing to give him the shot. So I think that we're going to stay away from the quarterback here.
Okay.
And we're just going to take best available, which is very clear, Kayvon Thibodeau.
Wow. This is one of the best picks. This is one of the best picks, Mitch. This would be a goal for the Seahawks.
Gotta go Kayvon here if he's available at nine. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I mean, no? Like,
yeah.
That's gotta
be Northwest
it, right?
Guy, right? Played in Eugene at college at Oregon. Gets to go up the road, up the five to Seattle for the Seahawks. And, I mean, that's a position they need. They need an edge. They need a difference somewhere on that defense, right? They need a foundational piece. And I think he could be that. I love that.
Yeah, he's got to be the guy. Got to be the guy.
Love it. So, that's a great pick, Mitch. That's a great pick. And what a steal. Again, fall into nine there for
Thibodeau. I feel like I made that pick already. Like, that's how good I feel about that pick.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah.
I feel like I just made that
pick. We can just kind of pencil that one in. Like, you know, it's going to happen. Yeah. We're good there.
Came on to Seattle. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I love it, Mitch. All right, Jets back on the board. They were up at number four and took Ikem Ekwonu. I would definitely be considering edge if Trayvon Walker or Kayvon Thibodeau were on the board here. Unfortunately, they're not. Cornerback is intriguing. We talked about Sauce Gardner, Trent McDuffie, both those guys very intriguing here as a need for the Jets, but I think they need to get a weapon. And this is one of the fits I've loved since the beginning of this draft process. Give Zach Wilson this guy, Drake London, wide receiver one off the board. Wide receiver one for me in this draft. Wide receiver one off the board for me in my first mock draft and will continue to be. Garrett Wilson's climbing up draft boards right now, but to me, it's still Drake London, and he is the fit at number two. Big guy, 6'3", was just dominating college football this season with USC before his injury. He's a power slot. Think Michael Thomas in his role in the NFL. That's what this guy can be. And that is the exact type of player you would want to pair with Zach Wilson in this offense. So for me, it's a no-brainer. Elijah Moore, Corey Davis, Drake London, you have the makings of a pretty good offensive unit around Zach Wilson there, and you've added on the offensive line. That would be a home run draft in the first round for the Jets.
I mean, I can't argue with it. I don't think Drake London, the whole who's the wide receiver one off the board here, I think is still a little bit up for debate because I still really like Garrett Wilson. I still really like Jameson Williams.
But if it wasn't for the injury to Williams, he'd have a very strong argument for wide receiver one, undoubtedly.
Right. And that's probably the biggest thing that makes it hard to argue against Drake London is that Jameson Williams is not healthy right now. He's rehabbing. Well,
London isn't either, but he will be healthier by the time the season comes. Whereas Williams, I mean, he might be out his entire rookie year. You know, that is.
Well, I don't know if about his today. He might be a
if he comes back in late November, do you even try to trot him back out there? Or do
ACL injuries, though, are treated differently. Like, you know, they're rehabbed a lot better.
We'll see how it goes. But certainly he's going to miss, a serious amount of time. So it makes it difficult. But
yeah.
All right. You're up on number 11 with the Commanders. First pick for the Commanders in the history of the franchise. Mitch, incredible.
It is incredible. It is incredible. And look, there's a lot to look at here still. Mm-hmm. I mean, a whole ton. I think one of the biggest needs for Washington is on the defensive side, second level. Second level needs a lot of help. Give me the Utah product, Devin Lloyd, to go 11.
Okay. All right. Devin Lloyd. You know, they took Jamin Davis last year, the linebacker in the first round, but that's not stopping you from taking Lloyd here.
No, hell no. I mean, to quote the great Bill Parcells, you can never have too many great linebackers. So why not take a guy that's got Devin White type ability, super athletic, super high football IQ, guys makes plays all over the field. Why not take the shot on Devin Lloyd? At the 11 spot, he's only averaging going just a few picks, you know, deeper than where he would go in this draft at 11. I love Devin Lloyd to the Commanders. This seems like a great, great fit for him.
You know, I will say, Mitch, maybe not the direction I would go, but if you're pairing Jamin Davis and Devin Lloyd, different skill sets, right? Lloyd is an off-ball linebacker, but he could play more on ball, right? He's very good in coverage. He also can rush the passer. Lloyd is versatile. He's the type of modern versatile linebacker that you'd want. He can rush the passer. He can defend the run. He can play pass coverage. He
Bradley Chubb type.
He could do I would say like a Fred Warner type is really okay. Like he doesn't have the pass coverage skills of Fred Warner. That's like what really sets him apart, but versatile in that way. And Jamin Davis is a more raw prospect, big athletic guy, but more of a guy in run protection, rushing the passer, not a guy you're dropping back in coverage. So you would have that capability with Lloyd there in that balance between the two of them. And that would be, man, if those guys both develop into what they could be, holy cow, that would be quite the tandem for the Commanders.
Looking at a Hammond-Lambert possibly combination there. So
that would be quite intriguing, Mitch. I love it there. All right, on to the Minnesota Vikings on the clock at number 12. And Mitch, now we're going cornerback. We're taking another corner here for the Vikings. I think this is kind of the only spot. I think corners, big need for the Vikings, and they're going to be all kinds of options for them here at number 12. They might have their pick of CB1 off the board at number 12 in the actual NFL draft. Now, I had the Falcons, right, taking Derek Stingley earlier, so he is off the board. But we're going to go Trent McDuffie here, the cornerback out of Washington at number 12, because I like the fit with the style of play better in Minnesota for McDuffie than I do for Sauce Gardner. Sauce, a bigger guy, you're going to want a little more man coverage there with Sauce and that style of a defense. Minnesota, a little more zone, so Stingley, McDuffie, those are more that type of prospect that would fit. Now, Sauce Gardner can play everything, right? It's not to say that he couldn't play in a zone, but I don't think you'd be taking advantage of him as much. So fit-wise, I like McDuffie better in Minnesota, and that's why I'm going to go with McDuffie at number 12.
Yeah, definitely not where I thought you were going to go.
I got to keep you on your toes, my friend. I mean, look at us.
We're both doing it. Which, like, if we're picking a team now, now I'm extremely happy because at 13, I'm taking Sauce Gardner here.
Okay.
For the Texans.
Wow. What a overhaul of your secondary. If you're Houston, you pick up Kyle Hamilton and Sauce Gardner in the first round of this draft. Holy cow. If you're the DBs, if you're the secondaries coach, you're loving life right now. Holy
shit. Why the hell wouldn't you if he's there at 13?
I love that, Mitch. I love that.
And quite honestly, when you were – so before you made that pick, I was between three. It was Sauce, it was McDuffie, and it was George Karloftis.
Yeah.
Out of Purdue. And if you didn't take the edge, you took one of the DBs. I was going with the other one. And honestly, I got the one I wanted. So Sauce can fit in any system. He's a pure coverage guy, super physical – great technique when covering big wide receivers. Sauce Gardner is the total package in my mind. Should be CB1, I think, in this draft, but you know, in this draft he's going CB3. So
yeah, no, and I think, I mean, Sauce is excellent, and I think again, I mean, if you're the Texans and you're overhauling your defensive secondary this offseason with Kyle Hamilton and Sauce Gardner, you've done a hell of a job to set yourself up in the future. And you know, no matter how that shakes out, you can feel confident, you know, in those sort of pieces to build around, which is what the Texans should be looking for in these top two picks, pieces to build around on one side of the ball, or the other. Those are valuable positions. That is a whole unit of your defense that you can feel secure about. I love that, Mitch. Love that pick. All right. Ravens up at 14 here. And I'm going to go, maybe this is a little different. Maybe this is a little out there, but I am targeting offensive line. I value O-line so much, Mitch. You can never have too many good offensive linemen, and you can never do too much to improve your offensive line. So I am going to go on the O-line for the Baltimore Ravens, and I'm taking Trevor Penning, the tackle out of Northern Iowa, who we discussed earlier. That next tackle for me in this group that potentially, I think top 15, top 20, that's realistic for Penning at this point. I think he's going to go that high. And what you see is a raw prospect that plays with a lot of energy, with a lot of bite, right? He's a tough physical guy. I love that for Baltimore, Mitch. Ronnie Stanley, Trevor Penning at the tackles in this run game. With this run attack with Lamar Jackson, that type of ferocity, that's the type of intensity that you need. And after they traded away Orlando Brown last season to the Chiefs, this offensive line wasn't the same, right? They tried to patch it. They tried to make it work. It didn't work. They brought in Morgan Moses, who's a fine tackle, but he's not the type of tackle that you need to make this offense get back to the heights that they saw a few years ago when they were truly dominant. So I love adding Penning to this, his intensity, his tenacity, I think will do great along this offensive line.
I mean, the Ravens love running that read option with Lamar Jackson, and intensity and domination on the offensive line is what you need to run that type of scheme offensively. So Trevor Penning, a guy that is, like you said, high motor, very intense, very dominating on the offensive line. This is the type of fit that you want for kind of that read option type offense that Baltimore has been known to run every so often. So love the fit with Trevor Penning. Philadelphia goes number 15. This is a tough one. This is a tough one, but I think I need to give Jalen Hurts another weapon. And I'm going to go Garrett Wilson here.
Okay.
I'm going to go Garrett Wilson, give him another weapon to throw to. It's probably not the prettiest pick. I think that there are probably other picks that they could go in the direction of, but it seems to fit something that they absolutely need. We got Devonta Smith on one side, have Garrett Smith on the other side. Jalen Reagor is not panning out right now. I think they should move off Jalen Reagor, in my opinion, and give Jalen Hurts another young weapon to throw to. And Garrett Wilson is definitely talented enough to do that. I think of a little bit of an OBJ type, great hands, good catching in traffic, ability to get open. Garrett Wilson fits that mold for Philadelphia.
Yeah, you know, I like that pick. And, you know, two picks in this mid part of the first round, right? They had three originally before that trade with New Orleans. So just two. And certainly they're going to address defense with one of those picks. But I do think wide receiver is a spot they should consider. And, yes, they did draft Devontae Smith last year. But you could never do enough to add for your young quarterback. They have Dallas Goedert at tight end, and they've paid him. So there is investment there, but a secondary wide receiver, that would be a lot of speed on that offense, right? Garrett Wilson ran a great 40 time at the combine, which has really boosted his draft stock alongside Devontae Smith. They'd be quite the combo there. So I do like where you're thinking here. I don't think, I think wide receiver is a great pick here, as long as they go defense with that second pick. And well, Mitch, I will have that second pick at 18. So I'll make sure to secure a defensive player for them and fill out this draft. But I do like that pick, wide receiver two off the board, Garrett Wilson at number 15. I've got the Saints at 16, Mitch, who did pick up that second first round pick in the trade with the Eagles. They get 16 and 19. I think, Mitch, this is interesting here with the Saints. This is interesting here with the Saints, right? I think they're going to go quarterback at some point, right? It would be reasonable to say that they're going to go quarterback, but I am going to go first with the wide receiver, and I'm going Jameson Williams. I'm going Jameson Williams because Michael Thomas is the only weapon on this team in the passing game besides Alvin Kamara, who's like they really legitimately use as wide receiver too in that offense. So adding speed and a deep threat for Jameis Winston, who has a cannon, and if this guy can just get healthy and be healthy, that speed is going to be killer and a great compliment to Michael Thomas. So it's a pick that maybe helps now if he's healthy. If you go in a different direction, if you're completely tearing down this team, all good. Still going to be a piece that's going to be very valuable no matter what direction you go. And maybe you address quarterback at pick 19. So I'm going to go first Jameson Williams at 16. May also because Chargers may be looking at him at 17. So you want to get him while he's there because he might not be there at 19.
No, that's probably a smart pick there is you have to get the big weapon that you could add to whoever's playing the Saints quarterback spot. You have to give him that. You have to give him that that weapon that they could look to. So I like the pick. I really like the pick a lot. I really thought you actually were going to go quarterback there. Really thought you were.
I was thinking about it.
Yeah, at 17, look, the corners for the most part are gone as far as
group, yeah.
You know, you could reach for an Andrew Booth, but this is way too early to start reaching, I think, at 17. We've seen the Raiders make that mistake a lot, most notably Damon Arnett, where you start reaching too early. I think they should stay in the box, make the right pick, Bernard Raymond is going to be the ad here for them at Central Michigan. A good physical defense or offensive tackle. They need to protect Justin Herbert a little bit more. He was on the run a lot last year. They could go add another wide receiver. I was looking at like a Chris Olave, but you know what? If you protect Justin Herbert, all the other things will fall into place. So let's start with the hog mollies up front.
Yeah, I think that's fair, Mitch. And they do have a need at tackle on the other side of Rashawn Slater. And Ryman is a raw prospect, right? New to the game of football. I believe he's from like Germany or somewhere in Europe. He's new to the game, but just has a physical outlier and the type of guy that's going to need some development. But I believe they may still have Brian Bulaga, right, this season, who is going to be on the way out. But what a great mentor, perhaps, for Ryman this year as you transition between those two. Give him a year to sort of, you know, get familiar with the league, and you hope in a year or so he could be your full-time guy. But I do like addressing tackle here. If you don't go wide receiver, and with Jameson Williams off the board, I think tackle probably the right play.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Mitch, I'm up on the board with the Eagles at 18. Again, they took Garrett Wilson at number 15, the wide receiver out of Ohio State. And we're going to go defense. And there's three players right at the top of this board that I'm eyeing here. George Karlaftis from Purdue, Devontae Wyatt from Georgia, and Nakobe Dean, the linebacker from Georgia. And that is who I'm going to go with for the Eagles pick. Here is the linebacker, Nakobe Dean, from Georgia. And listen, the Eagles don't take linebackers. Like, infamously, they don't draft linebackers in the first round, but they're going to do it here, whether it's Lloyd or Dean. They just need to. It's such a position of need for them. And they're right in the sweet spot in this draft to get one of those guys and not reach. And, you know, you're right. Good value. So I like N'Kobe Dean. I think, you know, a little undersized. I think that's the knock on him, but he doesn't play like it. He's a winning pedigree in that great Georgia defense. And again, position of need, and they're the right place to get it. It'd be hard to pass up for me. If you go D line, also think that's a good pick for the Eagles, or if you even go secondary, if the value's right, but linebacker here, we'll go to N'Kobe Dean.
I like it a lot. Look, I got the Saints' second pick, as just as you had the Eagles' second pick. I got the Saints' second pick. I think we're still looking in the quarterback spot here, round 19. This seems to be a spot where they could go. Give me Kenny Pickett to go to the New Orleans Saints at number 19. Big ties to the Manning family. Peyton Manning, a mentor of his at the University of Pittsburgh. Manning's ties to New Orleans, ties to the Saints. I like that Kenny Pickett gets an opportunity to compete with the Jameis Winston in that situation, in the quarterback situation that they have in New Orleans. It just seems like the right spot, the right fit. Kenny Pickett to New Orleans is what I got.
Yeah, with two first-round picks right in the mid-first round, it's going to be a good spot for quarterback, I feel like, in this draft. You know, probably one in the top 10 with Willis, maybe a couple in the teens and early 20s. So we get three or four quarterbacks perhaps in this first round. And, I think with acquiring that extra pick, it gives the Saints an opportunity to get a good player with one and a project at quarterback with the other, right? And so Kenny Pickett, that next guy on the board, I think Willis and Pickett are 1-2 respectively in this draft class. And then I do think it's a tier into that next group of Ritter, Howell, Corral, depending on how you have them. So I do think if you go quarterback here, Pickett is the guy, and you hope that maybe he at least pushes Jameis in training camp and starts showing some signs as a rookie, potentially. Is an older prospect, very much experienced, 60 starts in college or something like that. It's crazy how much he played. But I like the pick, Mitch. And because you took quarterback, we're going back-to-back QBs, baby, because Pittsburgh's on the clock at number 20, and the Steelers, if anything, I mean, they need offensive line, but they certainly need to figure out the future at quarterback. And it is not Mitchell Trubisky who they added this offseason. And it is a good pick for now. I think Trubisky's a fine acquisition, but they need to be looking elsewhere. And I, you know, my thoughts on the quarterbacks have shifted a bit here, Mitch, on how this second tier is ranked. And I am actually going to go with Desmond Ridder here, the quarterback out of Cincinnati, as QB3 with the 20th pick. And I think Ridder has shown well and was perhaps a little underrated in this early draft process. There's not a lot that Ridder doesn't have that stands out, like Malik Willis and his athleticism, like the arm talent of some of these guys. Ridder is good at a lot of those things. That's basically, he's very good at a lot of different things. He's a very experienced college quarterback. He's got an athletic upside that is underrated. It's not as good as Malik Willis, but he's certainly capable as a runner, as a quarterback. I've seen him compared to like a Marcus Mariota coming out of Oregon, right, as far as an athlete. And I think that's good. And Mariota was never like a read option quarterback in the league, but certainly a threat if he got out of the pocket. And I think that's what Ridder could be. And if you're the Steelers, you're looking for a prospect who you believe could lead your team in the next year or two. And I love the fit with Ridder. Short trip from Cincinnati to Pittsburgh, Ridder at number 20.
I love it. And actually, that goes just on one of my Hill predictions. Desmond Ridder will go back half of the first round. So,
okay. Well, there you go.
I hope pans out just the way you talked about it. So Desmond Ridder to Pittsburgh. I mean, Pittsburgh needs a quarterback. They got to figure that situation out. Mitch Trubisky, definitely not the answer. So Patriots at number 21. And I think this is the spot that this guy goes. It just seems to fit perfectly. He's actually slid down the board as far as his ADP goes. The new Greek freak, George Karlaftis, goes number 21 to the New England Patriots.
Wow. Doesn't that just seem like a Patriots pick? Now that you say that.
It does. Actually, born in Greece, by the way. Athens, Greece is where this guy was born. So a brand new Greek freak coming to New England. Guy's got great length, great speed off the edge, tons of power. He's an absolute monster the last few years for the Purdue Boilermakers. So I love this fit for New England.
Yeah, no, I like you said, when you said that, I hadn't really thought you were going to go there. I thought you were going to go wide receiver, right? And I do think wide receiver will definitely be in play there at 21. But yes. Karlaftis could certainly go, he's a pick. I think the Eagles will certainly consider in the mid rounds there. Could certainly go before 20, but I love that pick there at 21, Mitch. At 22 with the Packers on the board, and this is the pick they get from the Las Vegas Raiders in the Davante Adams trade. They're going to take a wide receiver in the first round. I hope it's not going to be here though. I'm not taking it at 22, Mitch, because there is a player on this board, who I just can't pass up. And listen, this is not the biggest need for the Packers. Obviously wide receiver would certainly be the biggest need. This is a move for now and a move for the future. And a player that has just slipped too far down this draft board, and that's Tyler Linderbaum,
Iowa. I was hoping he'd go one more pick. God dang it.
The center out of Iowa, Linderbaum. And listen, he would fit the scheme for the Packers. And again, it's not a need. He's got to be a center. And so you might have to move around your offensive line a little bit here, but he is just too good of a prospect to pass up here at this point at 22. And now that you have two firsts, you can use that second first round pick on a wide receiver and add a weapon. And I think there will still be good value there, but Linderbaum would be hard to pass up. I would have gone Olave if it wasn't Linderbaum. I would have gone Olave, the wide receiver out of Ohio State. Instead, Linderbaum at 22.
Damn. I was really hoping he'd slip one more pick to the Cardinals. Cause that seems like a great fit to go
that
to the
would
Cardinals.
Be a good fit, yes.
Great fit to protect Kyler Murray. Ah, look, and now I'm in a position right now where there's not really too many viable offensive lineman options. There's Zion Johnson, honestly, that you could take in this spot, but you know, I feel like that's just a tad too early for him. I think they probably go here. I go interior defensive line, and I just wrote an article just a couple weeks ago on why we should pump the breaks on Jordan Davis. And Jordan Davis and his teammate Devontae Wyatt are here right now.
Right. They're in your room. They're in your house.
Yeah, well, no.
That must be extremely intimidating. Yeah. Those guys are both very big.
It is. They're both looking over the beef. It's like, who the fucking gonna pick?
Don't make the wrong pick, like, bitch.
I don't know who I'm gonna pick.
Then I think you have to pick Jordan Davis because he's by far the most big, the biggest and most imposing of the two. So if you didn't want to get,
you know what? I'll take the ass whooping and take Devontae Wyatt here.
Okay. All right.
As I've said in the past, and this is less about Devontae Wyatt as it is Jordan Davis. Jordan Davis seems like a gimmick player to me. And this is probably the first time I've been hot about a guy just not being who I think he's going to be. Jordan Davis seems like a William Refrigerator Perry type player. Like, he's going to be a gimmick type player. Not that he's not a good athlete, but I don't think he's a good defensive lineman. And I like his teammate Devontae Wyatt a little bit better. So give me Devontae Wyatt to the Cardinals here at pick 23.
Yeah, and I do think I'm with you there, Mitch, that I have Wyatt over Davis as far as the defensive interior rankings go. And Wyatt has just shown he's thrown better as a pass rusher in college, right? He's shown more of an NFL role, frankly, right? And I think that's the question for me as well with Davis is just what's the NFL role? Is he a run stop only guy? And if that's the case, how are you taking that guy in the first round?
He's a gimmick guy. He's a gimmick guy.
How are you taking that guy in the first, as great as he could be at that role, how are you taking that guy in the first round with so much value out there? It would be very hard to do. So yes, I think Devontae Wyatt, right pick here. Great, great spot for the Cardinals to pick up a great player here. I've got Dallas on the board at number 24. And I think Dallas is looking either side of the line, O-line, D-line. And O-line, again, as you mentioned, not in a great spot anymore. Most of the talent, five tackles off the board and alongside Tyler Linderbaum. So, I'm not really feeling the offensive line. So we're going to go defensive line here. And we're going to look We're going to look at Edge. And I know we have Micah Parsons. And I know we have Dexter Lawrence. But Parsons is versatile. He can rush the passer. He can also do other, you know, he can also drop back as a linebacker, right? And you're going to need him to do that as well. And they certainly showed to use him in that regard. So I'm going to go Edge here. And I'm going to go Jermaine Johnson out of Florida State, who I think, you know, I've seen in the top 10 of mock drafts, which is insane. A guy who had a great combine and really helped his draft stock here. I think this is more appropriate place for him to go. 6'5", 250, redshirt senior from Florida State, and good run stopper, 23 run stops and 14 sacks in 2021. And I think this is a spot where, again, offensive line would be great, but if you're the Cowboys, just adding pieces, and maybe you go secondary here, but I don't love secondary either. So I think Jermaine Johnson has great upside, has high potential if he hit. So I like that fit for Dallas.
I think it's a great fit. Need the edge guy to complement everything else that you have on your defense. Love the fit for them. You know what? Just a double J name sounds like a Dallas Cowboy already. You got Jimmy there Johnson, you got Jerry Jones, double J name. Jeremiah Johnson.
They'll probably sign that guy too, whoever he is.
What is he, Amish? What are you doing? The Buffalo Bills, number 25, got some need at wide receiver, man. I know they just signed Stephon Diggs to the big contract there, a big contract extension, but I think you need the young piece to go along with that. Give me Chris Olave.
Wow.
Number 25 to the Buffalo Bills. Just seems to fit the mold.
What a pairing, too, of Diggs and Olave, the wide receiver out of Ohio State there at 25 for the Bills, and that would be a powerful combo for Josh Allen. And you could not go wrong. I think they could add defensive interior. I love looking cornerback here for Buffalo, depending on the value. And I think maybe at this point, Andrew Booth, Kyer Elam, you're feeling maybe a little better about corner here, 25. But Olave falling all the way to 25, falling in your lap, hard to pass up if you were Buffalo.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Mitch, I'm on to the Tennessee Titans at 26. And to me, you've got to add wide receiver. You've got to add wide receiver here if you're Tennessee. You have A.J. Brown, and you've traded for Robert Woods, and that is it. And last year they needed wide receiver. They didn't really add. And I think that's the direction that they need to go. I'm going a little different here outside of the box. There's a player I like a lot. I don't like the fit, though. So we're going to go with Sky Moore, Western Michigan wide receiver. The reason why I'm going Sky Moore, 5'10", 195. I've seen comps, and I think this is a great comp, to Golden Tate, right? Mm. A guy who doesn't have the size but could still play on the outside because he plays with intensity, plays with some ferociousness, has the shiftiness, broke 26 tackles last year. Sky Moore did, obviously played at Western Michigan, so not the best talent there, but has shown really well in testing, and a guy who I do think, write this down. I'm put this on the hill or whatever you want to call it. Sky Moore is going in the first round. He's going in the first round.
Put it on the board.
Yeah. So you can put, I'll die on the hill. Sky Moore is going in the first round. Somewhere in this Tennessee, Green Bay, Kansas City range, you're going to see Sky Moore off the board. I like the compliment to AJ Brown here, skill set wise, for Ryan Tannehill in this offense. So yes, give me Sky Moore, Western Michigan. And listen, maybe this isn't a good pick because they busted on Corey Davis, right, with the fifth pick overall a couple years ago, and he was pretty sure a Western Michigan grad as well, so maybe they wouldn't do it just for that reason, but I like the fit, so we're going Sky Moore.
I love it out of you. I mean, I don't know if I buy it, but I love it. Love dying on that hill like you'd have going on with the Sky Moore. So number 27 pick, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Look, they got to add offensive line. They got to protect the old man that's coming back for his age 45 season. However old he is, Zion Johnson out of Boston College. Give me here for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Just a great fit and fits the need. They really need to fit that need on that interior offensive line, that guard center position. And Zion Johnson fills that for them. So give me Zion.
Yeah, that would this is honestly like an ideal scenario, I think, for the Bucs to get Zion Johnson here at the back end of the first round. Started his career at Davidson, last 3 years at Boston College, played a number of different positions, mainly guard, but has played center and even played tackle. But he's probably going to be a guard, 6'3", 313. And so, yeah, I mean, that's exactly what they need. They lost Ali Marpet, right? Retired Alex Kappa off to the Bengals. So certainly need to address that there. I love that pick and the way the board fell for them. Perfect for Tampa Bay. Mitch, Green Bay is back on the clock at 28. And I didn't take wide receiver last time, right? I could have and arguably should have with Chris Olave on the board. Hard to pass up, but I trusted it would work out in my favor. And I believe that it did. We took Tyler Linderbaum at 22 and now at 28. We're taking one of my favorite wide receivers in the class and arguably, and I think a top three wide receiver in this class who did not go type three in this exercise, Treylon Burks, the wide receiver from Arkansas going to 28. I think Burks did not test well in the combine and pro day settings. And therefore he has fallen down boards since, but I like Treylon Burks, 6'2", 225, great speed. And I just think that with Burks, you want to use him in the ways that a lot of, and I hate making these comps because he's not kind of the same guy, but the way Deebo Samuel and AJ Brown and some of these guys are used in the run game with his speed, quick screens, you know, opening up the route tree for him. That's the type of offense that's going to work best for Treylon Burks and utilize that skill set the best, right? That's why I didn't take him at 26 with Tennessee, because they already have AJ Brown. That seemed redundant. I didn't like that. I like the idea of filling your pass catchers out like a basketball team, right? Somebody that does something really good. And you have a bunch of guys that do a bunch of different things that you can utilize and go to over and over again. But with Green Bay having so much open, right? Nothing to go with. You could do anything with your offense. That's the type of versatile weapon that I think that coaching staff will really enjoy. So Treylon Burks at 28.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't drafted a wide receiver in the first round since like 2002. This would be the definite time if you're going to re-sign a guy, your franchise player, back for a semi-long-term contract. You have to bring something back to him, especially after losing Devontae Adams. You have to give him wide receiver. So Treylon Burks absolutely feels like the right pick here. Number 29, the Kansas City Chiefs, one of their first, the first of their two consecutive picks here at 29 and 30. Wide receiver, defensive line, quarterback, they have some holes. I think they go cornerback here, and I'm between two, because there's one that I actually really like, and there's one that should be the favorite. I'm going to go with the one that I like. I like Jalen Petrie out of Baylor.
Okay.
To go to number 29 over here. I mean, just the guy is so freaking good. Just seems to fit the system so well. Andrew Booth was the other one that I was on the fence about. But, you know, Jalen Petrie is just such a solid piece to add in the defensive secondary. I know it's probably a little bit of a reach, but you know what? When you got two consecutive first round picks, if you reach a little bit, you're okay. You can redeem yourself here with the second pick in that first round.
Yeah. You know, I actually don't think it's a reach at all, Mitch. In fact, I did have Jalen Petrie going to the Chiefs in my mock draft 1.0 about a month or so ago. And I love this fit, right? They need help at safety. They need help at slot corner, and slot corner is really where Petrie played, but he played in a lot of different places around the defense, right? He played up in the box. He played it in the slot. He played safety. And so he's the kind of defensive piece that you can move around, and certainly something that is a need for this defense. Now, I will say, since they lost Tardavious Ward, the cornerback in free agency of the Niners, I think outside corner has become a more present need than maybe it was before. So perhaps an Andrew Booth or a Kyer Elam, the corner out of Florida, makes sense there, because that's a guy you're putting outside. Petrie, again, 5'11", 198. He's the guy playing in the slot, but still a versatile weapon and a valuable weapon. And I absolutely love the fit in Kansas City. It's why I mocked it in my first mock draft. And I'm not going to argue with you here on Petrie to the Chiefs. I think that's a home run in my book. I love that you draft corner too, because I have the second pick here for the Chiefs, as they have back to back here, pick number 30. And I'm going to add an offensive weapon, right? Because we've traded away Tyreek Hill. We still have Travis Kelce and still have Mecole Hardman. And they brought in what, Juju, right? Didn't they bring in Juju?
Yes.
So they've got Juju, right? But, you know, you should be looking towards the future with this first pick, this other first round pick, and try to find another wide receiver. And I'm going with a guy that, listen, you might not be super familiar with, but he is skyrocketing up draft boards, and he is a player to get familiar with. Christian Watson, the wide receiver from North Dakota State. 6'4", 208 pounds. And he was a guy who absolutely killed the combine with his speed and his high level testing, and obviously extremely raw coming out of North Dakota State. Doesn't have a lot of tape to hang your hat on or be super confident in, but the type of raw talent that a team with multiple first round picks, and not, you know, they don't need to hit a home run with the wide receiver in the first round to get by. That's not the formula for the Chiefs. So they are afforded a little flexibility here to make a move and take a guy with upside. To me, Christian Watson is that player.
Love that pick. I love that pick. Love the insight that you have about a D1AA wide receiver. that should be something to keep an eye on. I love the insight that you have there on Christian Watson out of North Dakota. Look, we got the Bengals at number 31, second to last pick of the first round. What have we talked about all offseason long, Dallin, with the Cincinnati Bengals? You have to protect Joe Burrow. Have to keep him from staying on the run. And I think they do that again. Guys projected to go in the first half of the second round, but I think it's a solid pick here. Give me Kenyon Green from Texas A&M, the guard. Have to solidify that interior offensive line. At all costs, protect Joe Burrow. That's the future of your franchise right now. That's the future face of your franchise. That may be the greatest Bengal of all time if you protect him. Just make sure that you do it. And I think they can't go wrong with taking an offensive lineman here. And Kenyon Green, who's projected to be a back half of the first round and early second rounder, this seems to be the right place to take him. So take the Aggie here.
Yeah, no, I think he's the next guy kind of up on that interior offensive line, which is where the Bengals would be looking. And you're certainly disappointed that Zion Johnson or even Tyler Linderbaum, right, didn't fall your way to 31. And that would be a great scenario for Cincinnati. In this case, I think you're right there going Kenyon Green. If this is how it really played out, perhaps this would be a spot where the Bengals look to trade down, right, 8 to 10 spots right to the early second, pick up some extra capital, and then you take Kenyon Green or somebody else, and you know, you're not feeling maybe as much of a reach there. But I for the sake here, even if it is a bit of a reach, even if he's an early second guy, I think that's a smart place. And again, the spot the Bengals have to do, like, do not overthink this. You need to invest on the offensive line. No matter what kind of moves you made this offseason, you have to continue to build the O-line. So you have to go.
Yeah, great offseason ads, but
yeah,
they just need
more.
No,
they did great.
They need more.
They wasn't enough. You know, it's just, it's plain and simple.
They need more.
Enough.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we come to the final pick in the first round, and it's the Detroit Lions picking for the Los Angeles Rams here at number 32. They took Aiden Hutchinson, the number 2 overall pick, and it puts them in an interesting spot, right? They could go kind of any direction, right? They don't have any super prescient needs I don't think quarterback is in play. I'm going to say that. I'm just going to say that here. Don't think quarterback is in play here. I understand the fifth year option thing. You know, if a guy falls and you want to take a shot, you have Howell and Corral on the board here. Yeah, maybe. Yes, maybe. But the Lions should be posturing themselves to be picking at the top of the draft next year and take their quarterback next year. So what happens if you take Sam Howell 32 and then you draft CJ Stroud next year at the top of the first round? Then what are you doing with Howell? Then why did you take that second round, that second first round pick, and waste it on a quarterback where you could have got something more valuable? So I am not necessarily a proponent of taking quarterback at 32 unless somebody really just falls, right? Like nobody drafts Pickett and you're like, I mean, why not? I don't know if I'd go quarterback. So if you're not going quarterback, for me, at this point, we're looking BPA, right? Best player available, best value, regardless of position. And I think cornerback is a need for this team. They did draft Jeffrey Okuda a couple years ago, but he hasn't really been great, and you can always add more cornerbacks in the league this year. So I'm going to target Andrew Booth Jr. here, the cornerback out of Clemson, maybe Kyer Elam, another way you could go there. But I mean, you could take a shot on Jordan Davis, right? You could go, safety, a lot of safeties, Lewis Seen, Jaquan Brisker, Daxton Hill on the board. That you certainly go safety, but we'll go corner. We'll go Andrew Booth Jr. And feel happy with that to wrap up the first.
Yeah. I mean, just addressing one of the many needs that the Detroit Lions has. I agree with you that quarterback is not the answer right now. Jared Goff is a good placeholder, I think. He's certainly not the answer, but you know, he's a good placeholder right now, especially for the next year. He will hold the job just fine. And then you could try to go find the project guy that you can work on to become the next face of the franchise as far as quarterback goes.
Yeah. Well, and listen, like, you're paying Goff, right? Like they owe him money.
Oh, yeah.
Like they can't, like, you know, it's not as just simple as, like, I mean, they don't owe him a ton. It's not like a Matt Ryan situation or some worse quarterback situations, but it's not like, you know, they can just replace him outright. And, you know, with the way that they're building this team, next year is the year you want to target. Just keep adding pieces here in 2022. Well, that's going to wrap up this mock draft. Let's do a brief recap of at least the top 10 here, Mitch. So the top 10 went, we alternated evens, odds, Mitch on odds, I on evens. Top 10 went as follows: Evan Neal to the Jags, Aiden Hutchinson to the Lions, Kyle Hamilton to the Texans, Ike McQuanu to the Jets, Charles Cross to the Giants, Malik Willis to the Panthers, Trayvon Walker to the Giants, Derek Stingley to the Falcons, Kayvon Thibodeau to the Seahawks, Drake London to the Jets. You know, we got a little more interesting as it went on, but pretty chalk for the top 10, I'd say. You know, we were pretty chalk there.
Yeah, not too many surprises. I think a little bit of shuffling as far as maybe where they might go in that top 10, but like, not too many surprises. Like, oh yeah, that guy should go top 10. Oh yeah, that guy should go top 5. Granted, Malik Willis might be the biggest surprise out of that top 10, but that's only because you couldn't trade back. So like,
which I would be advocating for 1,000 out of 1,000 times.
Sure, sure. But I also thought it was really surprising that Derek Stingley was the first quarterback off there. I mean, in my mind, that's still Sauce Gardner. And he went CB3 off the board.
Right.
So, like, you know, it, I guess just a difference of opinions there of, you know, maybe who's got the most upside, who's got the most talent coming into this draft is it's still up for debate as far as cornerbacks go.
Yeah, and it'll certainly be interesting to see how that plays out. I think that's a very good example of what to expect come the NFL draft is how do teams view these guys, right? This seems like a tier, but what is the rankings, right? And I think scheme fit is huge with this. Stingley's really pretty versatile. Sauce, you're going to want more in a man press kind of scheme. McDuffie more for a zone scheme. So that will affect teams and their level of interest in certain prospects, and that could affect how they get drafted. Some interesting just little tidbits here on this draft. Three quarterbacks selected: Malik Willis at 6, Kenny Pickett at 19, Desmond Ridder at 20. 7 wide receivers. Pretty surprising. That's a big number for wide receivers, but again, a position of value. And I think considering we've seen the contracts for wide receivers that have come out, right? Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams, even a guy like DJ Moore getting $20 million a year, right, with the Panthers. Teams are showing that they highly value wide receivers. And right now, wide receiver is the second highest paid position in the NFL. And teams are, showing that with how much they're shelling out for wide receivers. So perhaps it will become more and more important. And just as we see with quarterbacks getting pushed up draft boards, perhaps we will see a similar effect with wide receivers getting pushed up draft boards as teams seek out high value targets.
Yes, 100%. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All righty, Mitch. Well, that is going to do it for the mock draft, and that is going to do it for the podcast today. Guys, we appreciate you sticking around and listening. It's been a beautiful evening talking with you and recording this podcast. You're listening to this in the morning. You're listening to this afternoon. You're like, Dallin, it is not the evening. What are you talking about? It's the evening for us, and it's been a beautiful one, Mitch. If you don't already, follow us on social. The Twitter is at Sports Hour Guys. Instagram at the Sports Hour Guys. The TikTok at the Sports Hour Guys. You can also follow me on Twitter at Lil Thoint. Check out the website if you haven't already, thesportshourguys.wordpress.com, and all the content that we already have there and will have there in the future. Mitch, remind the folks about Anchor.
Anchor is the only way that you can become a part of the conversation. Do yourself a favor. Become a part of the conversation. Be more like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, and be a contributor to the sport. You can go contributor to the podcast. You can go on there, leave a voice message. If you leave that voice message, we will play it here on air and make sure that we answer that question. You can go on there and leave a review, just the same that you can do on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and review. Tell us that we suck, because Dallin, that is the only way that we can get better.
It is the only way that we can get better. You did wear, I did not note this earlier, and I apologize, you did wear the correct hat today. Corpus Christi Hooks. You promised that you would wear it, and he did wear it throughout the podcast day. So I did want to recognize, I apologize for not getting to that earlier. Honestly, should have been the number one item on the agenda. But, alas, here we are in the waning moments, getting to it now. So thank you for following through with that, Mitch. Well,
next week will be the Frisco Rough Riders. So okay.
We're getting Teddy on the pod next week.
Yep. Yeah. We're getting good old Teddy
Theodore.
That's right.
You love to see it. I did want to add one thing here before we wrap up, because as we've been recording, the Hornets have been playing the Hawks, and the Hawks have defeated the Hornets by 29 points, 132-103. So it will be Hawks at Cleveland for the chance at the 8 seed in the East. As we suspected, again, we both, I guess right here, Cleveland versus Atlanta, we're both taking Atlanta.
Yes, Atlanta.
Okay. Yep. We both are picking the Hawks to go through. So we
by 20. By 20.
Okay. Atlanta wins both playing games by 20 plus points to get into the playoffs. You heard it here first. So we'll check on those next week, see how we did. But until next time, guys, we love you. We appreciate you. And we will catch you next week.
See ya.